Ladies and gentlemen, the national anthem of the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia.
For the coveted trophy that represents historic implications as we celebrate Saudi Arabia's progression for cultural diversity in the Vision 2030 plan.
Yeah, we'll talk about that out throughout the evening, but Byron, this is an historic night tonight.
I've got goosebumps on top of goosebumps. I can't even believe here I'm in Jeddah and I'm getting ready to watch the greatest Royal Rumble.
Here in Jeddah is different, and we're along the waterfront, the headquarters Business Park Plaza, the tallest building in Jeddah at 774 feet tall, the city known as the Mermaid.
Yeah, I think I speak for all of us when I say, we can't say how appreciative all of us here in the WWE have been for our entire stay here in Saudi Arabia. We've been obviously here in Jeddah, we've been in Riyadh, and the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia has been so gracious here to have WWE in. And I think I also speak for all of us when I say that this is a night we're never going to forget.
Absolutely. Loved it. Loved every minute of it.
Talking about treasures, guys, the food.
The menu, man.
I saw you in catering earlier.
Sarcasm.
I'm just going to leave it at that.
I almost stayed in catering.
Exactly.
We stayed dinner at our hotel last night from 7 p.m. until 11 p.m.
Well, guys, one of the big matches still to come tonight.
As a 9-time Intercontinental Champion.
Listen, they opened the first movie theater here in Saudi Arabia in 35 years recently. My sources tell me that the next screening is going to be exclusively Marine 6. Miz is that beloved here in Saudi Arabia,
all part of the Saudi Vision 2030. One of the reasons we are here tonight in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, a plan to reduce dependence on oil and develop public sector services like health, education, infrastructure, recreation, tourism, and of course, entertainment.
And that's what it's all about, an entrance fit for an A-lister.
So you may be wondering, well, what was that all about? This is why it's so significant that Andy Ruiz and Anthony Joshua fighting in Saudi Arabia is a big deal. We're going to get to that. All of what you just heard will make sense. So let's just start with the facts, what we know. Fred, thanks for being on. We got a full-length episode here today, but we are going to start with the news of Andy Ruiz Jr. facing Anthony Joshua, the rematch announced to be in Saudi Arabia. So here are the facts. Matchroom announced that the rematch was happening December 7th, 2019 in Saudi Arabia. And the venue that it will take place in is not yet complete, but it is being constructed and expected to be ready by December, and it's going to fit somewhere between 7 and 8,000. This Monday, we will have a press conference to announce the fight. However, Anthony Joshua and Andy Ruiz are not expected to be there. Ruiz has been quiet, and we have heard nothing from him. And we've seen a tweet that says that he has not signed the contract, and I think if we can read between the lines, has no intentions of doing so. So, Fred, we heard rumors about Saudi Arabia. We've heard rumors about Saudi Arabia for many fights. But I thought this was only reserved for fights where guys had no other options, like an Amir Khan. But now we hear it. Saudi Arabia is going to be the location for Andy Ruiz versus Anthony Joshua. Are you skeptical that the fight will even happen?
I don't know. This is so bizarre. I have no idea. The fight will happen. But whether it happens in Saudi Arabia, this seems like a stunt almost on Eddie Hearn's part.
Now, the biggest question we should ask is why? Why do you think they chose Saudi Arabia?
I have no idea. No part of this makes sense really on any level to go to Saudi Arabia unless they're cashing out AJ. Like, unless this is exactly like Brooke and Eddie thinks AJ's done, you know? And now he's just trying to get as much money as he possibly can out of him before you know, he just fades.
Don't you think that it would make more sense logically to have signed a fight with Wilder next, even though that fight may not have been there or even as lucrative as possible? Why Andy Ruiz in Saudi Arabia?
Well, again, this is who knows? It's like there's a dumb thing going on with the writers who I have no idea what they're on about. Like guys like Mannix, Coppinger, even Dan Raphael, they're almost like viciously against Andy Ruiz for like, this is what he deserves for wanting a neutral venue. Well, New York's a neutral venue to Andy Ruiz, you know, not Saudi Arabia, you know.
And if there was any question about that, did you hear the crowd response in the first fight?
Yeah.
Andy Ruiz, prior to the fight, could not sell out the Staples Center. He could have fought in the Staples Center and would not have been the hometown draw. That would not have been a 50-50 crowd or in favor of Andy Ruiz. I mean, people think that the location has a lot to do with it, but really, it's like Anthony Joshua is one of the biggest stars on the planet. Yeah. How do people have this notion that he could fight in America somewhere, and that's like he's at a disadvantage? The only disadvantage he would have would be mental, in terms of he's not fighting in a place that he's comfortable with. Which, I understand that, except that kind of goes out the window when he was the one saying, I want to fight in MSG again. But, you know, funny how the writers kind of forget about that.
Yeah, like that was all AJ's show. And then suddenly it's like, well, Andy Ruiz, they had to fight on Ruiz's home territory. it's mass stupidity going on. This is like Eddie's pushing. I don't know. Like Eddie knows what's going on. So that's where we're at a disadvantage here. So he's the only one who knows how serious he is on this point, on whether he's trying to flex for this, where he's trying to get something else, or if he's serious. It just, none of this makes sense. It doesn't make sense considering that he's in a partnership with DAZN too. Like AJ isn't, but why are you going to fight in Saudi Arabia? Like you save your UK pay-per-views, you know, because there's only like a 2-hour difference. So it's not going to be that, you know, big massive change, like the 6-hour difference for the US ones. But no, it's all stupid, you know. And that's the thing, like, people forget how big America is. You know, California to LA is only 2 hours less travel time through flights from London to New York.
You were talking about California to
California to New York. Sorry. Yeah. You know, and then they go neutral venue. Well, it's like almost 3 days from, you know, California to get to Saudi Arabia. It's like, come on. It's stupid. I don't know what's going on. Like but it's even more stupid is the way these major media guys are talking about Ruiz. Like he somehow brought this on himself. Like this fucking idiocy.
Well, he has no. Well, they keep saying he has no leverage.
Yeah, but they've been saying that the whole thing. So then they go, well, he wanted a neutral venue, but you guys just said he had no leverage. They can't make up their mind on this because, like, now apparently he can choose venues, even though he's supposed to have no leverage.
You sign this contract that we give you, you accept these terms, or we take you to court. That's no leverage.
It's just can't make their minds up on this.
To the UK to now Saudi Arabia?
Yeah, because Andy Ruiz wants a neutral venue. It's like, well, you guys just said he had no leverage. So why are you now saying he's picking the venue? You know, and then the competitor had another one just hours after him tweeting that Andy Ruiz won't see any of this extra money. Like, I don't know why that's a thing to cheer about. And then going, well, Ruiz might not sign off unless he gets a cut of this extra money. It's like, but you guys just once again said he had no leverage. You know, he seems to have a lot of leverage for a guy he keeps saying has no leverage.
Well, I have an alternative take on this. Because I think what's important here is to follow the money. And I think that there's a strong possibility that they want to cash out Joshua for sure. But I think the reality is that DAZN does not want to pay. So we had a situation where Andy Ruiz has zero leverage. We had Chris Mannix tweeting out, look, and I'm talking months ago, tweeting out, look, Andy Ruiz signed a rematch clause. The location, the network, those are up to Eddie Hearn. And we already know what the answer to those will be. The fight will be in the UK, and it will be on DAZN. Now, the fight actually doesn't have any sort of agreement yet on who's going to broadcast. It's possible that DAZN has a first right of refusal, which they would be kind of stupid if they were to refuse it. However, they've announced this fight, they've announced the fight, and they did not announce a broadcaster, which leads me to believe that the holdup was never about the venue. I believe they had a venue. And while Andy Ruiz may have dragged his feet about it, I think when it came down to it, they chose a venue. The venue said, we're willing to pay this amount of site fee. And Dazen said, we're willing to pay this much money. And with these contracts that, quote unquote, were already negotiated and Andy Ruiz had no leverage, they had dollar amounts already signed. And now the onus of paying for those contracts fell on Matchroom. And Matchroom was like, hold on a second. We can't pay this money. We're not paying this out of pocket. We thought you, as our broadcast partner, Dazen, would be the one to pony up and pay that money. And Dazen's like, listen, you guys want us to pay a lot of money for this fight. And we're just going to tell you right now, the only fight that we're going to pay that much money for is Wilder versus Joshua or Canelo versus Golovkin, because both of those guys are under contract. But they look at it. They probably looked at the trends over the year and they said, oh, well, when Canelo fights, it tends to spike up. When Joshua fights, it tends to not spike up. We don't see a massive increase in subscribers. So therefore, we believe that he's not the draw that we thought he was. And therefore, there's no reason for us to spend so much money, even with all this attention that Andy Ruiz has gotten and Anthony Joshua has gotten from the shock result of the first time. Maybe they don't see that this fight is going to generate that much money because we're approaching the end of the year. The silence from Gennady Golovkin's team about his next fight is telling, I believe. We don't have a Canelo fight yet. And I think Dazen's like, look, we're not going to pay that money. You guys have to help us out here. We cannot afford to pay it. And so Eddie Hearn, you know, he pulls a fast one and says, oh, you know who will pay money? You know who will help us all out and alleviate some stuff? And yeah, maybe the fight comes on a little later, but we could still do it on Sky Box Office. And in the U.S., it'll still be an afternoon fight, just like it would be if it was in the U.K. Let's go to Saudi Arabia. You said time difference, not so bad. Works out. And I think Dazen's like, you know, maybe we don't want it in Saudi Arabia. But why else would they agree to this when for so long they said it is important that not only does Anthony Joshua fight in the U.S., which he did, signed to fight Jarrell Miller, fight in the U.S., but the rematch take place in America. Why would they do that? Well, the reason was they thought they would get a certain amount of money from that happening. And now the fight's going to Saudi Arabia. I mean, is what I'm saying making sense? And I don't want you guys to think that I'm trying to hate on them. I'm just trying to think what could be the explanation. And that's all I could come up with, really, if I think about it, that makes sense, is Dazen just doesn't want to pay for this. Not that much.
Well, I think we said on a podcast a while ago that if they did take it to the UK, DAZN wasn't going to pay. You know, so that theory does sort of fit together, because here's the thing they got. Okay, Anthony Joshua isn't moving the needle. What would be good for them in their U.S. attempt to, you know, sell subscriptions would be the rematch in the U.S., you know, because that's a fight that Andy Ruiz got a lot of, you know, media coverage in the U.S. So that's something that they'd actually want on their network in U.S. time, you know, to push in a U.S. site. But then if Eddie's taking it away, of course they're not going to pay him anything. You know, they're not going to pay, like, I think they gave what, AJ $32 million or something, the rumor was, to fight in the U.S.
That's roughly, you know, what I remember too.
Yeah, it's like they're not going to pay that for him to fight in the U.K. You know, so yeah, that then Eddie's like, okay, I guess I'll make up the shortage fighting in Saudi Arabia.
If Dazen was able to broadcast in the UK, I could 100% have seen this fight signed weeks ago. It would be taking place in the UK, and everybody would be happy. And Dazen would say, we'll gladly pay, you know, Anthony Joshua, whatever we're supposed to pay him, and Andy Ruiz. We'll even give him a little bit of a bigger cut. And I think the other aspect here in the holdup may be that someone wants an option on Andy Ruiz. And certainly Dazen does, because if you think about it, okay, you came to our network once, you beat our second biggest draw. Now you're going to come and very likely do it again? And then you leave and go back to Fox and Showtime? We can't let that happen for nothing. What are we left with? No heavyweight titles. we're left with a battered and broken Anthony Joshua. And I guarantee you, if Anthony Joshua loses the rematch, he will never win a fight against a top guy in his career. You don't come back from these kind of losses. Not a heavyweight. So I think that that's part of the holdup as well. Why? Now, does that explain why it went to Saudi Arabia? Not 100%, but I think if you add all of these factors in, I think you kind of can see the justification for why they would go down there. Do we leave anything out? I mean, also, what's your take on the options thing?
Well, yeah, that could be a thing. Is that because now they're talking, well, Andrew Ruiz, if he doesn't want to fight this, you know, what's he going to give us for us to move it to like a normal place, you know? But that's that could be something they're angling with, and that, like I'm saying, that could be an angle from DAZN, that could be an angle from Eddie Hearn. No one knows who could be throwing that out. It's really just a screwball that doesn't make much sense, you know, this whole Saudi Arabia, except for the pure money for Eddie, you know. That's all. Everything else, like, this is not something that DAZN wants, you know. And he's a partner in Matchroom, you know, USA, you know, taking your big blue chip prospect to Saudi Arabia, you know, just.
I mean,
it's a bizarre play. It's just a bizarre one.
One of the biggest things that I think is just strange is like any writer who goes over there to cover this is either A, with one of the biggest outlets in the world and they deem it necessary to have somebody there covering it, or two, is a shill of the highest degree. Now, do you want to talk about Macau, or should I?
Go ahead. Well, yeah, well, we saw that with when Bob Arum flew everyone out.
Yeah.
You know, they're pretty much on his dime. Yeah, and then they show them out.
Because coverage will be non-existent if somebody's not paying for these bills. It is expensive to go to the Middle East. And here's another thing. Mainstream media is picking up on this for all the wrong reasons.
Yeah, it's not looking
so
good.
So if mainstream media is slamming this and condemning it, just the way like they did WWE's events that they had there, and now you have no boxing writers able to even afford that. I mean, nobody gets paid this much in boxing. Not even Mike Coppinger, okay? Although maybe since maybe he's got the cash. But for, you know, family men who do boxing as a job, you ain't making enough money to go to the Middle East. So who's going to cover this? Who wants to go to the Middle East? Who wants to go to Saudi Arabia to cover this? Nobody? Mm-hmm. So how does DAZN benefit from this? How does DAZN benefit if the only promotion is going to be Eddie Hearn talking on whoever puts a damn camera in his face from now until the fight? Because Andy Ruiz is not going to promote this. There's no incentive for him to promote this fight. Should it actually go down in Saudi Arabia?
Yeah. It's fucked up. No, but that's it. Yeah. only the promoter would be able to have money to fly the boxers out, just like we saw with Macau, like when Radio Raheem almost cried, you know, talking about how great Bob Arum is. But then you saw with the intro that this is exactly the type of crap they want. They want people to be pushing out these, oh, we're not just oil. Because even though everyone likes to say, oh, the Saudi oil money, Saudi Arabia's running out of cash. They need to diversify their economy because they're only oil. You know, and they got to pay so much money just to keep the populace placated for certain reasons, to allow the royal family to continue to run everything. So they need to start developing other industries, and they don't really know how because of the way they're so restrictive and freedoms and everything.
They've spent a ton of money that the Saudi Arabia has on trying to get out of the oil industry. And you know that they bought a $400 million stake in Endeavor, and Endeavor gave that Endeavor. You may recognize.
Oh yeah. Because
as the entity that may or may not be trying to buy PBC, Saudi Arabia purchased a stake for $400 million, but Endeavor gave it back because they're like, oh, you want to kill journalists? You can have your money back.
Yeah, but then they just picked a fight at a place close enough to Saudi Arabia.
Hey, man. They were like, oh, are there brown people there? Cool.
Yeah you know.
Well, let's talk about this... so first of all, I do want to, we should make this clear. Is when we say Saudi Arabia, Do we mean a single person who bought this fight? Is this some rich guy who's trying to play toys with actual humans? Is that what it is? Or is it something else?
Well, here's the difference. Like, it doesn't even have the coverage of saying, okay, well, this isn't connected. Everything in Saudi Arabia is like run by the royal family, essentially. Like, this is the sports authority here. It's like one of his cousins, I think, or maybe a brother that's in charge of it. So it's not like these are like independent things just trying to put on.
No, you know, this isn't like like MGM.
Yeah, this is totally part of the Saudi government.
It's government run, like legitimately just government run. This is the Saudi Arabian government. And the reason why I played that sound at the beginning is because the WWE spent a 5-hour show basically doing PR. And you got to think, they weren't doing that because they're kind. They were doing that for two reasons. A, to make it okay because people were not happy that they were going to Saudi Arabia. They're like, oh, look, guys, it is so beautiful here. But the other thing is, like, you don't think that the government's like, hey, we're paying you an estimated $450 million over the next 10 years to stage events here. You better be saying what we want you to say. You don't think that that has something to do with it? Are you ready to watch the AJ versus Ruiz card and hear Brian Kenny and Chris Mannix putting over the fact that Saudi Arabia is so progressive because after 35 years, they opened up a movie theater?
Yeah, wow. Look out. It's a new Saudi Arabia.
They legitimately barely gave women the right to drive. And I don't want to turn this into like this, like, oh, bashing Saudi Arabia. But like, I do think that there's trouble in terms of enjoying a boxing match.
This is it. People like are coming up with these. Well, you know, America's kind of has bad things. America doesn't jail bloggers. You know, they aren't whipping people because they're gay.
Are you sure? When was the, hold on, let me think. When was the last time we whipped somebody, gave them 1,000 lashes because they were gay?
Yeah, not from a state-run perspective.
When was the last time we just did a public execution where we just beheaded somebody?
Yeah, it's like...
When was the last time we just jailed feminists?
Yeah.
Or anybody trying to talk about human rights?
Yeah.
I can't remember. When was the last time we said, oh, sorry, woman, you cannot make any decision. You need a male family member to make any decision for your life.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's like you can go to Twitter and see the things people write about in America and no one's jailing them. So,
oh, you've been left some money? You have an inheritance? Oh, you better get a male relative to sort that out for you because you ain't getting none of this money.
Yeah. It's so progressive.
Yeah.
I just like that intro, though, because like suddenly these wrestlers know anything about the development of the Saudi Arabia economy. It's like, yeah, I'm sure they picked that up on their own research.
So I watched that whole card basically to pick up on all, and I have a lot more sound, but I didn't want that to be 5 minutes long. I have a lot more sound. But they did one segment where they brought out these four Saudi guys who are, I guess, got like a developmental deal. And then, so they're just introducing the guys, and it's like, congratulations, guys, you know, we're very happy for you. And then, like, the music hits, and these two Iranian guys come out. And then they just start talking in, I don't know what language, but the crowd is definitely booing super hard. So they must have been, you know, talking about how, you know, women should have rights or something. And then, like, the Saudi guys beat them up. And the crowd is all happy, and it's like, oh, wow. Are we going to get a boxing match where we get to see, like, some Saudi guy beat the hell out of some dude from Yemen or something?
Well, Iran and Saudi Arabia have a conflict, so they're probably just running down their religion or something because they're two different branches.
Two different branches? Like the FBI. Islam.
Yeah. They're like the Sunni and whatever the hell the other side is.
The question is, will you get beheaded for believing the other one?
You can.
Oh, good to know.
It depends on what you're up to.
And look, we're not talking about the people of Saudi Arabia. People are people everywhere around the world, and you know, whatever. But the government seems to be up to some pretty naughty things. I mean,
what were you? You're worried about offending our Saudi Arabia listeners? do we have a big segment in Saudi Arabia?
That's a good
podcast?
Question. I should look. I can look at the heat map of where our listeners are. Maybe we have like a lot of listeners in Saudi Arabia. Maybe this is just a ploy to give the massive amount of boxing fans in Saudi Arabia a fight that they could go to.
Well, tell them to donate to the Patreon some of that Saudi oil money.
Imagine if one of them did, and then we just turn this into like a Saudi propaganda podcast.
I totally would. If they kick enough cash, yeah.
Hey, man. Saudis.
I'm for sale.
Hit us up.
Yeah, give me like maybe like, I don't know, a 2% taste of that $100 million you're giving
then
AJ?
Then we would be worth more than the promoters.
Yeah.
Let's see. Let's get back on task here. Okay, what's up with the venue, okay? When was the last time, and let's see if we're both synced up on this one. When was the last time you heard about a venue that wasn't built yet for a big fight?
Bob Arum's mythical Manny Pacquiao versus Floyd Mayweather outdoor stadium.
That they were going to build in like 2 months.
Yeah, Bob said, no fight will happen. We just got to build the stadium.
Yeah, and so now we're like, and that... Even back then, even in 2010, when we were very new to social media, when the boxing fandom online wasn't quite as ridiculous as it is today, although it was still pretty bad. Even back then, people were like, I don't know about that. You're going to build an outdoor stadium with like some bleachers? Where are you going to put this? Now, granted, yeah. Vegas is a big spot, but it's like, can't you get MGM? Can't you just put this in a real venue?
Oh, but they need a neutral zone, don't you remember? This is the only place in the world that you could hold it on neutral ground.
Ah, I see. So
there's only three countries available, you know.
I mean,
and Ruiz won't fight in one, AJ won't fight in the other, so Saudi Arabia's a natural choice.
Hmm. I mean, of all the places around the world, this is it. Yeah, it just seems such a weird thing. Like, do you think that Ruiz is basically just trying to call him on everything and say, oh, you guys want to make the fight? You want to announce the fight? Go for it. We'll see what happens when I don't show up.
No, I think they, of course, have got their plan, and it's whatever, you know, Al's guiding him on that. And him just staying quiet just means, yeah, whatever, we'll play this out and see what happens.
I mean, do you think that if Ruiz legitimately doesn't want to fight in Saudi Arabia, that there's a way that he could get out of it?
It would be the terms of the contract.
Which, of course, we've been told he has zero leverage by Chris Mannix and Mike Coppinger, that the location has already been decided.
So somehow those guys got contract details. Yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder who fed him that.
It's very clear, and I think, actually, shout out to Kevin Ioli, who, you know, we always talk trash about, but he basically just put these guys on blast on Twitter and was like, oh, it's interesting, you guys are tweeting out exactly what I got in a text message.
Oh, did he?
You see that?
I only saw his Kevin article Ioli. Where he's blasted him.
Oh, no, was it, I don't know if he tweeted it, it might have been in the article, I don't know.
I don't know. But Ioli, like, yeah, when Kevin Ioli's like putting you on blast for being, I don't know,
writing
having
what
morals,
what you're being told to write.
Yeah,
him,
like,
of all people,
he's pretty much a UFC bot. So when he's taking shots at you, you know things are kind of fucked up.
He's like, I know what this is like. I know what it looks like when you're writing what you were told to write. This is it right here.
Well, exactly. It's like, when have these writers have ever gotten a site fee amount? You know, and suddenly people are talking about a $40 million site fee. These guys have never known how much a site fee is, you know, and now they've got all this information about the amounts being, you know, offered and everything. And it's like, when has that ever happened? It hasn't happened since like the 80s when that information used to be freely available.
I mean, I think the site fees are also a lot smaller than people think. Like, we know that in Vegas, basically, the listed purses are never what they actually are. You'll see like $5 million, $3 million for a fight that you know guys.
That's guaranteed purse versus end purse. You know, that's just the guarantee. That's the
and
money
that's just
that
the for
the
commission.
Has.
It's for show. And I think part of that.
No, it's. Yeah. Okay. Go ahead. That's a point.
I was just going to say for those dollar amounts, I think that's the site fee. I think that's what they have to have in the bank. Or not even in the bank, but on hand for fight night, which the casino or MGM, they'll front and they'll say, we got this today, but obviously that money's coming, a lot more money's coming from pay-per-view. But, like, I think most writers don't really know, and granted, I'm also speculating here, but we don't know about that stuff. Why would a promoter let that out?
Yeah, yeah, it's only when promoters will tell you, you know. So no one knows. Yeah, so the whole thing about the guarantee, yeah, of course, guys don't get their full pay when they're doing, like, pay-per-view, because it takes months for the pay-per-view money to come in, you know. So there will be sort of back, but, like, Showtime will back up the full amounts and everything, you know, dependent upon, you know, the revenue coming in. But that's why the guarantees are lower than the actual amount, because the guarantee money has to be paid that night.
Right. Know?
Except for, like Floyd could put $32 million because Floyd's a promoter. So if he doesn't pay himself, he's not going to sue himself.
Well, yeah, he's like, you know what? I actually have this money in the bank. So, you know.
Yeah.
But, like, yeah, if you actually, like, this is in Ocean's 11, they talk about this, which is why they robbed the casino. Because they're like, oh, they have to carry more money today because guys are fighting.
Now, oh, was that the whole angle?
Yeah, yeah, that's why they robbed it on the night of a Lennox Lewis fight. Because they knew they would have a lot more money.
Oh, that's when, yeah, that's the Lewis Rockman fight. That's what Lennox Lewis is doing when he got instead of training. Yeah, but, well, they give him checks, so.
I thought they paid him in chips. Just need
they'd love to. They'd love to pay
forklift.
Him in chips.
Oh, of course. They'll just take you out with a forklift. Yeah. Just loading pallets into Floyd's Bugatti. Do you think that Ruiz, like, let's say he says, I'm not signing this, and you guys can fight yourselves in December? Do you think that's a possibility?
That'd be tough, because then again, like, if they have a rematch clause, he has to offer him the rematch, you know.
What if this clause has a date, and they screw up the venue, and it's not ready in time? Then what?
Well, there you go. That there's all these things are going to be covered, you know, and that's the thing, we can speculate all around the world about it. But that could be, it's like, what are the terms of the rematch? You know, having a venue that isn't, you know, ready or partially ready or something. I think there is a venue there, but it's an open air, and fucking they're going to fight in an open air venue, and like it gets cold in the desert at night in December.
Right, they were saying, like, the daytime it might be like 80 degrees, but it's going to drop nighttime, a lot at night.
Yeah, it'll be like still like 10 degrees Celsius, which is, I don't know, like probably maybe.
Well, I don't know what that is either, so 50, we're screwed here.
So 50 Fahrenheit or something like that, roughly?
Well, that would be rough.
So it's not really cold, but the 10 degrees.
No, but it's cold if there's like wind and stuff.
Yeah, yeah, like to be boxing outside, that's, it's, I don't know.
But it gives Joshua another excuse if he loses.
Well, of course, like this, it makes no fucking sense why they're going to do this. You know, it's almost like that's it. If he loses here, well, then this loss will be buried, you know, because no one's really going to be paying attention except for the UK.
Oh, that's actually an interesting point, where if no one's paying attention here and he loses, then everyone forgets about it.
Yeah. Yeah. This is his best one yet, you know.
Well, I think in the original contract, I don't think they ever anticipated that they would go somewhere without a venue that was made, and I bet that there's no language there that states anything about a venue under construction or something. And furthermore, if they were going to put that into the rematch contract, saying like, hey, we get an automatic extension should the venue experience any trouble. Well, Ruiz hasn't signed any contract, so here's some more leverage he has, of which he has zero.
Yeah, it'll be interesting, like, if he can drop the belts, but he doesn't want to drop the belts. He'll have the belts. He'll probably fight, you know, but it's going to be when they see so much money, they're like, well, I'm not going to fight for the original amount you kicked out, you know.
Do you think that that's... I think that that's mostly what it is, because I tend to agree with you that I think Ruiz is fine fighting over there. I think he's not fine fighting over there for the original amount.
Yeah. Yeah.
And someone's got to budge here. But the question is, well, who's going to budge? Because Dazen's not... Apparently, they've saved 8 figures. So at a minimum, $10 million they are not paying. I think it's probably a lot more than that.
Oh, yeah, because we saw when AJ's his – when Showtime was buying his fights, they were only paying like $500,000 for the rights fees to air his fights, you know. So it's not like these UK fights are pulling in, you know, tens of millions of dollars for rebroadcast.
The highest ratings I ever saw in a UK fight that aired in the daytime was like 1.1 million.
Yeah, yeah. No one's paying that big money, you know. Just like no one pays that huge of money for UK pay-per-view or US pay-per-views, you know.
Unless like, it's like Mayweather-Pacquiao or Mayweather-McGregor. No,
but even the amounts that they were getting – like you're saying the non pay-per-view areas. Okay, so like UK rights.
Okay.
Like UK rights would be big because UK is running pay-per-view there. You know. But for just airing in countries like in Europe that aren't there's no pay-per-view money, they don't really get a lot of money out of those places, you know. They get decent money, but it's not like, you know, breaking the bank figures. So that's it. So if AJ's his fights are, you know, in the US, well, they're airing the daytime, you know, so they'll pay, but yeah, the zone's not going to pay like $10 million just to have one of his fights aired in the afternoon. It's not.
Do you think that it's hypocritical that, and you and I have both been on the record here saying like, we want fighters to get paid as much as possible and they should try every trick in the book to get money. But at the same time, do we want it like this where it's like, oh, well, they are going to get paid a lot of money from Saudi Arabia though. Is it the same thing?
Well, the idea is that this isn't a fight that can't make money anywhere else, you know. And this is also the thing where they were like the Eddie Hearn stooges, you know, and the writers were coming out so hard saying Andy Ruiz isn't getting any of this money. So then who's it going to? You know, is it going to Eddie? Is it going to AJ? You know. So there, yeah, this isn't a case where you say, well, this is the best money they can get. They can get a lot of money close enough if they put it on the U.S. or even in the U.K. You know, so this isn't, you know, no. Not for what it's for, you know, the connections attached to this fight. You know, it's just, no.
Yeah. Do you think, like, well, so I don't think it's the same thing. I think there's a big difference between taking this money and, say, Matchroom taking Dazen's money or Golden Boy taking their money or PBC taking the investor money. It is totally different. And the reason why it's different is, like, you're taking money from the government. This is a government. That's why I played the sound at the beginning. This is not taking money from some entity like MGM. MGM's not, like, saying, hey, do some marketing for us. And well, propaganda, really. They're like, hey, put our logo places and let us show some commercials, but don't have a full-on 5-minute segment during the show talking about how everyone loves the new leader because he's so progressive and how happy you are to be of Saudi Arabian descent, which, you know, fine, you know, there's a line that one of the guys has is like, you know, we're becoming progressive by still keeping our culture and our traditions. It's like, okay, so executions are here to stay?
Yeah, it's not the same thing. Like the new crown prince, he also held his own family in that hotel room until they all kicked up their money. Eh? He shook them down.
Kind of like the way they. Never mind. I was gonna go down the wrong road here.
Like this isn't like okay. So what am I looking at? There's an online movement. Even for Muslims are talking about boycotting the Hajj because of Saudi human rights violations.
What's the Hajj?
That's when they travel to Mecca. It's a pilgrimage that a lot of Muslims will do. They travel because the Mecca and the whole the Kaaba is there and where they get in those circles and they walk around it and everything.
Yeah, I'm not too sure or familiar about that stuff, but I'm going to take your word for it.
Yeah, that's why I know. That's why I'm not really going in depth with it because you're not going to really care anyway. But hold on.
Not that I don't care. don't make me out to be some like intolerant person. I'm just don't have the necessary background knowledge here to appreciate what you're talking about.
It's an annual pilgrimage where Muslims around the world will travel to Saudi Arabia.
Well, also this is Mecca. Not a religious propaganda podcast. but
no, but
we
can see,
give
like,
people a taste of, you know, what maybe the broadcast could kind of be like.
Yeah, we're
although
gonna
not
be
about
religious.
Religion, it's
yeah,
about
yeah.
how progressive Saudi Arabia.
The Saudi
is.
Arabia is yes. See, anyone from Saudi Arabia that's got cash. See, we're talking about the Hajj, so yeah, you know, if you want to throw some money, we'll push for sure.
So, what percent chance do you give this of actually going down in Saudi Arabia in December as it's been announced?
Let's go with 50%. It's a 50-50 shot. Because they've already announced it, you know, they've already made big moves to it, you know.
But why do you think they announced it so early? Because it kind of doesn't make any sense. Like, oh, they announced the fight, and Andy Ruiz has not signed, Dazen hasn't even signed, they don't even have a broadcaster. Like, what are they thinking?
Because
they don't
they're
even
still
have a, they don't even have a goddamn venue.
They're giving themselves time for everyone to pay them to not go there, so...
Oh, the ultimate leverage. They even created a poster. It's got a poster.
They got a poster, yeah.
I mean, nobody's going to come out and say, oh, we'll top that $45 million. Easy. We'll top. Because, first of all, $45 million, because that's what we believe to be the site fee that they're paying, $45 million, because that covers nine plus the 32 or so that Joshua's going to get for this fight. So, around 45. I didn't do the math, but it's about that. So if that's what they're going to do, do you know how, like, let's say Showtime's like, hey, they raise their hands. We want the fight. And we'll work out a venue in the U.S. Okay. Do you know how many pay-per-views they got to buy or they got to do to break even there?
Yeah, but see, Showtime might do that because they got a lot of room. You know, they haven't spent a lot of money this year.
600,000. Is this a 600,000 buy pay-per-view?
It could be.
Oh, get out of here. It's not a 600,000 buy pay-per-view.
You don't think so, this rematch?
Nope.
Mm.
Nope.
Mm.
Nope.
Mm.
Nope.
Mm.
Anthony Joshua got punked the last time they fought. Okay.
Yeah, I know, but that's what people want to see. No one saw it the first time.
Oh, wow. Okay, just taking a shot at Dazen there, huh? Taking shots. Notice I bring up Showtime and you're like, oh, let's play now. No,
he's the first Mexican champion. There's going to be a lot of Latinos into that, you know.
I don't know what was. I don't know. I just don't see it. I don't see Joshua's connecting. I just don't see it. Like, I think the reason why Joshua hasn't connected in the U.S. is I think for us as outsiders, he comes off completely fake to us. Now the Brits, I understand he's a hero to you guys because he won the gold medal and you guys have been exposed to him for a long time, but. Coming from, like, if you ask somebody who's never seen him before, he comes off as just a phony. He's got this, like, and he also just doesn't have the hunger to be a star. He seems so nonchalant in interviews, and, you know, I respect that. I like the fact that he's not trying hard. However, you've got to have some theatrics to your gimmick, and he's got none. And that's why he hasn't connected. Andy Ruiz, the onus of the promotion would fall on him. But how many people would really want to sign up to or pay to watch this fight?
Well, you never know.
Now, it would be a huge coup for, for Steven Espinoza to pull that one off, but I don't see it.
Yeah. I think they would just to get their hands on it, you know.
Eddie Hearn, here's the other thing. Eddie Hearn would not let this fight go to Showtime. He'd rather go to Saudi Arabia than it go to Showtime. You know that, right?
Yeah.
Also, how would Dazen feel if Eddie Hearn shopped this around? Because apparently he was. How do you think that they would feel if he was like, oh, actually, I'm going to broadcast this on Showtime in the U.S.? How do you think he would feel or they would feel?
Well, I don't know. How do they feel about going to Saudi Arabia? You know, this is what makes no sense, you know.
Has anyone seen John Skipper and Oscar lately?
Yeah, he's supposed to be their partner and you're taking over the U.S. marketplace. And here he is, you know. Taking his ball and going home, and then going next door to another country. You know, I don't know. It's fucked. I'd like to be in that boardroom for these meetings, man. You got one branch of your, you know, golden boy. The promoter never shows up. You know, didn't even show up to your big announcement when he signed Canelo, and now you got your other branch where he's putting on he's just rebroadcasting his own fights. You know, And now he's taking away his crown jewel fighter away from your network.
It's crown jewel is what the WWE called their second event in Saudi Arabia.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
What do you think about two? Oscar tweeting out a picture of Virgil Ortiz, who won last night and looked pretty solid in his fight? And he put hashtag loyalty. Do you think Dazen's going to tweet out a picture of, say, I don't know, Jaime Munguia, who is fighting his next fight on Dazen, and just with the hashtag loyalty and just kind of like take a dig at Eddie Hearn if they were to take it off of Dazen?
That's a loyalty hashtag from a guy who wasn't at the fight?
Yeah. Oscar tweeted out hashtag loyalty and a picture of Virgil Ortiz.
The promoter's not. Bob Arum goes to his fucking fights. And Bob Arum's 87 years old. And Oscar can't even be bothered to show up. You know, no. Like, what the fuck? Loyalty.
Mike Cockney loves more like under to go contract. On about Oscar, or not Oscar, Bob Arum's travel schedule, which is nuts for a guy of his age, for sure. But I would like to see what Bobby Kraft's doing in his free time. I'm sure that's nuts.
Oh, this is fucked up. This is just a fucking...
What is going on at Dazen?
This is a shit show, and I love it. See, you know, the thing is that I didn't think DAZN would be able to run smoothly. But
why?
I didn't think it... Just
they
because
hired a cokehead?
Not even before
one?
Then. No, even before then. It was like, this is before the Canelo thing. This is like when, you know, the takeover was first announced. Because this is the difficulty. You're trying to sell not only boxing, you're trying to sell a service at the same time. You know, like they don't have the sports that they do in other countries. So it was a bit easier to like if you're in Germany, you're loving DAZN because you get everything. You get like pay-per-views, you know, you get a PBC fights,
you
get UFC.
Americans, non-German sports probably.
Yeah. But that's what I'm saying. Like if you're just a hardcore sports fan, you know, then you like that because you get all this stuff, you know. But if you're in the U.S., they have nothing but boxing because they can't get the rights to these other things. You know, like they're not getting the NFL rights. They're not getting MLB rights. You know, they get a show about MLB. Now they got a show about NFL.
That show's a complete failure, by the way. The MLB changeup show on Dazen. Like, we got more followers than they do. That astounds me.
That's because, and see, that's the thing. DAZN has promotion apparently somewhere, but they can't promote their own stuff. No, but
we don't promote at all.
I thought it was going to be.
I'm worse than Oscar.
Yeah, I know we are. We got to get back on this promotion grind. I thought it was going to be like a tough struggle, but now that they're having so many issues, I almost feel bad for making so much fun of them. You know?
Oh wow! Suddenly, you've got a heart.
I'm starting to feel a little sympathetic to how fucked up DAZN is.
Do you feel bad for Mike Coppinger about all of his inconsistent tweets that sound like somebody who's having a semi-mental breakdown?
I think it's time someone does a drug test on Mike because he's coming out like a cokehead with these confounding tweets, you know?
Wow. Okay.
The guy contradicts himself in the same day. Come on, settle down with these sources.
Who's the source? Eddie Hearn, who contradicts himself a lot. It all makes sense. Coppinger's fine. He's just repeating what Eddie Hearn says. And now when you see it in text like that, it's like, oh, wow, this guy's out of his mind.
Yeah, because people don't, when you say sources, people aren't going, okay, that's a source saying this. When you tweet it out, people are going that you're putting some weight behind this as a journalist, you know?
Well, yeah, because he's not like Adrian Wojnarowski, who's like super solid.
Yeah, you know, it's just I don't know, but yeah, DAZN is it's falling apart, man.
Okay, so let me just lay out some facts here about DAZN. So they signed the deal. Eddie Hearn is running the ship, and then John Skipper comes in and says, "Hold on, let me take the wheel. You clearly are about to already just wreck us." So Eddie Hearn goes and he's got to go run his little matchroom stable, blah, blah, blah. Okay, cool. They sign Canelo, cool. But then Oscar's not there. Oscar's just MIA. And then the numbers aren't good. Then they are good. Joshua loses. Well, technically, Jarrell Miller tests positive. By the way, Jarrell Miller might have beat Joshua, just saying. Andy Ruiz beats Joshua, and now Oscar is still MIA. Canelo and Ryan Garcia are like lawyering up because they are not happy with what's going on. They're trying to force Canelo to fight someone. They spend all this money on Gennady Golovkin, who should Canelo be out the picture, they're going to overpay in every single one of his fights going forward. I don't care who he fights. Unless he fights Anthony Joshua, they will overpay every single one of Gennady Golovkin's fights going forward. That is the worst contract in sports right now. And so these guys lawyer up. Now they have the rematch going to Saudi Arabia. Now they can't even get the Jaime Munguia fight right because this guy was supposed to fight Jesse Vargas, which made sense because you had their, both guys are with promoters that are signed network deals with DAZN. And instead of those two guys fighting, and which would be a much better fight, Jaime Munguia said, I will only fight Jesse Vargas if I could do it at 156-pound catch weight. Otherwise, bring me Patrick Aloti. At 154. That's the only guy I'll make 154 for. I know I keep saying I cannot make this weight anymore, but you bring me someone like Patrick Aloti, I can get up for that. So Jesse Vargas has no opponent. Jaime Munguia will fight on September 14th, Mexican Independence Day maybe? I don't even know what... Yeah, it's Mexican Independence. That's right. And Patrick Aloti is the opponent. Like, they can't get anything right.
No, it's funny. It's just the inmates are right in the asylum, you know.
And like Top Rank's having a pretty bad year this year. Like, and hold on, all you Top Rank fans are gonna get upset. Listen to me. What I mean by that is like Top Rank's been riddled with like opponents getting injured. They've had to put fights on ESPN, and I don't know that that's their call, but they've had to put fights on ESPN Plus. They can't get the opponents that they want, or opponents are getting injured. That's that, like literally Top Rank's been like the UFC this year, which is also very appropriate because their fans seem to not care whatsoever and don't think that they can do anything wrong. But like Top Rank's just had bad luck. I don't think that this is incompetence on their end. DAZN over here is just a mess right now.
Yeah, look, that man. The guy says, I need to catch weight at 156. And then he goes, or I'll fight at 154 with a different guy. I go, how does that make sense?
Like, if that's not the most blatant, like, I'm not interested in challenging myself fight, I don't know what is. Like, legitimately, I don't ever call people duckers. But it's like, dude, this is too obvious. You can do better than that.
Yeah,
Jesse Vargas is a career 140-pound fighter who, when he moved to 147, displayed zero power. Got beat by Manny Pacquiao, got beat by Timothy Bradley. Somehow he knocked out Saddam Ali, so he's amazing. But, like, Jesse Vargas hasn't looked good. Dude drew with Adrian Broner. Think about that. He fought Broner, and now he's going to go fight. Jaime Munguia was like, nah, I cannot fight the guy that drew with Adrian Broner. No way. I need a catch weight.
But is he loyal?
Munguia, as you like to call him?
yeah.
Kind of. He's actually on a co-promotional deal, so how loyal could he be? He ain't one of Golden Boy's guys. He's with Zanfer.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying.
Hasn't tried to litigate yet.
Yet, I don't know.
Well, I mean, last week when we left off on this, we were like, oh, Canelo hadn't gotten lawyers, but now that he's gotten lawyers, how do you feel about it?
Oh, well, of course, there you go. Now things get a little complicated. You know, he starts to lawyer up and starts to want to find out what he can do and where he can go. You know, for a bunch of guys, again, this is where the writer said, Canelo's got no options. Canelo's locked in. It's like, oh, well, really?
You thought.
Yeah, it's like, because it's like these guys aren't slave owners, you know. They're
not NFL team owners. Come on.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's they're boxers. They got a lot of leverage in certain things. You know, I just can't get over the idea that DAZN gave $18 million to a dude with cocaine abuse problems in his history. Now they're shocked that they're.
I'm sure John Skipper's getting paid more than that. Oh God, we're gonna get sued if somebody ever hears this.
That's all public information.
I guess we didn't say anything about extorting him, now did we?
Yeah, exactly. No, no.
And if we look at Golden Boy's track record legally, You like this is not a 50-50 fight. Canelo must have all the leverage. Jesse Vargas hired a guy, or not Jesse Vargas. Ryan Garcia hired a guy that, yeah, he's got a good track record with boxers. I can't remember his name. Do you remember his name?
Which one, Ryan Garcia?
Yeah, the guy, his lawyer that he hired.
Yeah, he hired some criminal defense attorney. Dudes.
A criminal defense? What did he do? Is he the one extorting John Skipper?
Yeah, maybe. No, this is what his main line is. Dealing with boxers is something he does on the side, you know, for fun. The guy's supposed to be a pretty big criminal defense attorney, though. So it's not like he's just like he's not like some ambulance chaser dude with a billboard up in Vegas or something, you know.
Those guys are effective, though.
Yeah, they are. I love their commercials.
I'm trying to look at his name. But the dude, yeah, he does have a good track record. Geez. Who do you think's representing who do you think is representing Canelo, and why do you think it's Chepo Reynoso?
I don't know who's representing Canelo. They didn't name his lawyer. I just remember something that was funny about this whole when they learned Ryan Garcia has a lawyer. Cause some people and some writers, and even then Oscar was like endorsing their thing, and those writers also have happened to have worked for Oscar doing international broadcasts. So I'm sure they're like completely unbiased in this idea. But they were trying to say there's a conflict of interest because Garcia's lawyer actually represented Garcia's manager against him. You know, because there's a conflict. There's like the Ryan Garcia, you know, whatever, he had issues with his manager. So right. He tried to get out of that thing. So this is the guy that represents his manager. And they're all going, well, this is a conflict of interest. Well, how is it a conflict of interest? You know, now it's between Ryan Garcia and his promoter. You know, the guy can represent different things. He's not representing another side. Like, it wasn't like he represented Golden Boy and now he was representing Ryan Garcia. He represented his manager. It's like, it was so stupid that Oscar's, you know, like he's putting a stamp. Interesting. It's not a fucking conflict of interest now that he's representing Garcia against the promoter. It's just, I don't know, it's just fucking stupidity. You know, if he was representing Ryan Garcia against his manager now, when he represented the manager before, there's a conflict of interest, but not against the promoter. That alone, I just found that fucking hilarious. That they're the way that some writers will posse up and defend certain promoters. It's just like, fuck, you guys are so obvious. Who's, you know, either throwing you some money on the side or giving you the leaks. It's just like,
so the lawyer is Guadalupe Valencia.
Yeah.
And he also represented Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., who famously exited his contract with Top Rank. Let's see. So, yeah, last week, I believe, we were talking about how we did not see a path for, or not a path, but we just didn't think it was likely that Canelo could get out of his contract. But how do you feel today?
Well, I thought there's a chance for him to get out of his contract. Yeah.
Okay, I didn't think so.
Yeah, because like I said, then again, this opens up avenues. You know, it depends how much he wants to push. Because when the promoter starts cutting deals and acting like his manager, it's, you know, there you go. He's got a path to break his contracts. I don't think it'll get to that point, but obviously he wants some shakeups in his relationship with the promoter.
Have you heard about Guadalupe Valencia being connected with Al Heyman? Because that is something that's been out there.
No.
You haven't?
No.
So I can't remember, but
I don't
when I looked into it, Jesse Vargas is a fighter who basically was signed or had Guadalupe Valencia as a lawyer. And when he basically got out of his deal with Top Rank, where did he go? He went directly to Al Heyman.
Yeah.
And you can probably connect the dots here with where I'm going with this.
Oh, well, yeah. Okay, I see what you're saying. But it's like connection. It's like what you're saying, Al Heyman is the one making all these guys sue their promoters.
I'm not saying that. I'm just saying
are you now trying to, are you going to start writing emails to Oscar describing Al Heyman
as a black Hitler, maybe?
Yeah.
No, no. The only emails I'm writing is to the Human Rights Commission of Saudi Arabia. No, I'm just saying that two fighters retained the services of one Guadalupe Valencia and wound up aligning themselves with Al Heyman, and we're talking about Jesse Vargas and Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. Is it possible that you think we may see young Ryan Garcia aligning himself with Al Heyman?
Well, I'm sure if he gets out, but again, we talked about his contract. His point of anger didn't seem to have much legs, other than they're making more money on him than he's being paid. You know, which isn't a sin. You know,
what would be worse?
if he's not entitled to any of that money, then it's just a gripe that he's more popular than they thought he'd be. So.
What do you think would be worse for Oscar? Gervonta Davis beating up one of his fighters or losing Ryan Garcia to Al Heyman?
Well, losing Ryan Garcia, losing any fighters for Golden Boy is tough because, it depends. Like how solid is their deal with DAZN? See, that's one thing about the Garcia fight that sort of gets... If they got this big outlet deal, of course his fights are going to be bringing in all this revenue because they got $18 million, you know, to put on these boxing cards. So they've got a lot more money coming in than they normally would if without this guaranteed deal. So I don't know. Yeah, Garcia, that people like him, but I don't think he's that great. So.
He's not. He should have lost his fight when he fought Carlos Morales.
Yeah. You know, but he's popular.
But too many people, I think you were probably one of them, was too busy reading the Facebook comments, which were hilarious, to actually watch the fight and realize that Ryan Garcia was getting tossed around the ring. Oh, God, I'm starting to remember that fight vividly. The quality was just so bad in that fight. Anyway, why haven't we
that
heard
the
about...
Facebook one? No, I said he was getting beat. I never really cared about the guy. I just knew that he was like lipping off Tank Davis. I was like... He fights Tank, this kid's gonna die.
Yeah. Okay, maybe it was Stu. Anyway, we haven't
Stu's
heard anything
a big
about
for Ryan Garcia. Yeah.
We haven't heard anything about Golovkin's next fight. What do you think that is?
Isn't it supposed to be IBF?
Oh yeah, you're right. It's in October.
Oh, see, look at that. Ooh, Mr. Boxing forgot something.
I forgot something. Man, you look at all this news of Canelo and all this stuff. And
I'm
woozy.
Like, anyone listening to this, I apologize, because all this stuff just making me, I'm dizzy. I can't handle all this, the goofiness going around boxing right now.
But wait, there's more. Regis Progre has filed a lawsuit to get himself out of the World Boxing Super Series. Did you read the documents?
Oh, excuse me.
Oh, damn. I'm killing him today.
Yeah. Yeah, I read part of him, yeah.
And so the gist of it, if I remember correctly, is basically DiBella saying, or the lawyers are saying, we had an agreement that a fight would be signed within this amount of time and that we would be paid on these dates or within this amount of time. And neither of those things were met. Therefore, it's a breach of contract and they should be let out. Do you think that Progre is going to get himself out of the World Boxing Super Series?
Well, this is kind of like a lawsuit saying, hey, guys, like, quit dicking us around for sure. This is the thing is, like, by the time anyone – this thing works its way through the courts, you could have already fought anyway, you know. But I think the point is that the WBSS was supposed to have this tournament wrapped up quick. You know, and they start dragging their feet because, like, this is it. No one wants to be sitting. This is why you can't get the top fighters into these kind of tournaments because they have options and they don't want to sit around for like a year while waiting for all these other fights to fall around in place. This thing's supposed to be done by now. It was supposed to be done in the summer, you know, and they're missing their dates about when they're supposed to be, you know, getting these fights done. So it seems pretty straightforward, you know.
They couldn't secure venues. They didn't have the money.
Yeah.
Basically, they're suing them for a breach of contract because the WBSS just couldn't do what they were supposed to do at any step of the way. And so I don't know how this plays out in court, but I do think it reads like Progre has a really good case that they can make. Now, obviously, we don't know what the defense is going to come back with. the WBSS had this release about how, like, all of that is not true, except for the fact that, you know, everyone seems to know that the worst-kept secret in boxing. No, it's not the worst-kept secret in boxing. But one of the secrets in boxing that we all know about is that the World Boxing Super Series just can't pay people.
Yeah, everything's delayed, and the fights are delayed, scheduling's delayed, you know. Like in Ludabella, like, of course, Lou's a lawyer, you know, so he knows how to push him. But that's it. He's not just Lou, though, because Ivan Baranchik was his first fighter?
Yeah.
Yeah, Baranchik, he had the same issue. Yeah, he wasn't getting paid and everything.
And it's funny Donaire
started
to
make noise. Yeah, he started to make noise, and so they scheduled for him, you know. But then again, that was the basis of this lawsuit, is that the 140 titles were supposed to be wrapped up before the bantamweights or whatever they are.
Yeah, well, do you think it's possible? I think that DiBella wouldn't do this without some sort of outside incentive. We've heard Broner going at Progre.
Well, yeah, definitely. This
Jose
is,
Ramirez, like, just want to fight.
Yeah, exactly. Jose Ramirez is now he took out Hooker. Now he's getting big fights. He's getting big money, you know. And so yeah, Progre is kind of iced when now you've got attention on him, you know. And especially, like they said, if it was supposed to be done by the summer, and it's not, it's like, well, we're not sitting around and waiting for you to get your shit together. Like, this guy's got a career, you know.
Yeah, and Progre is already 30 years old, I believe.
Yeah, so it's not like
he's
22.
Super young. Yeah, this isn't Gervonta Davis, who can afford to take some time off.
Yeah, yeah.
And here's the other thing. So my belief is that he's going to sign with ESPN. I can see DiBella going into that co-promotional deal because the biggest fight for Progre, if Progre's future lies at 140, is to fight Jose Ramirez before Terrence Crawford fights Jose Ramirez.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, because Progre is an attractive fight that Top Rank would probably make, because now you've got someone with a bit of a name, like, not huge name, but he's a recognized fighter in the division that they could actually match him up with, you know, so.
And I think it's just a smart move by DiBella to go to Top Rank. You have guys at 140. You see what they're doing with Fury. They're willing to build you.
Yeah, yeah. No, that makes sense, because, like you said, they got, you know, Ramirez 140, so. Top Rank would probably want to do that instead of matching him up with Crawford and sort of killing one of their fighters. So,
I could definitely see both of those guys getting killed by Terrence Crawford.
No, but I'm saying, like, so now, but that's what I'm saying. So otherwise, if Progre doesn't go to ESPN, that's the option, is that they've got to sort of sacrifice Ramirez. And Bob doesn't want to do that. Bob never, he only wants to sacrifice fighters when he thinks they're pretty much washed up and done.
I don't see a path for him to go to PBC, but right now Progre, given his weight class at 140 and possibly moving up to 147, makes him one of the most attractive free agents. Actually, either way, he's probably the most attractive free agent out there, just who's not aligned with PBC and is technically a free agent. But I think Progre is attractive because, like, at 140, you join the PBC mix, and it's like, wow, you have fights for the next 4 years.
Yeah, well, like I said, the only thing that would be holding them to the PBC is that he knows all those guys. He knows the Charlos. He knows Errol Spence, you know. That's his only connection over there, really.
You think that possibly they don't want to deal with DiBella, though?
Well, like I said, yeah, DiBella's kind of on the outs ever since he tried to poach sort of Deontay a bit there. So, yeah, like I said, that's it. He's not like a Peter Berg and Mark Wahlberg are the closest friends of a... Although Manny's now at PBC, so you never know. They were always tight with Manny, so...
I think they were tight with Freddie. Peter Berg made that whole On Freddie Roach series where it really showed that Freddie Roach is kind of an ass.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm not trying to be mean either. If you watch that, Freddie Roach is just like... He's like irritable and like kind of like pisses people off, and he like has no filter and just kind of like...
Yeah, but I think that's the best thing they could do for Freddie, because it shows he's not like a little, he's not a victim, you know?
No.
He's still the fucking hard ass he was when he was a fighter before he got, you know, Parkinson's. So.
Yeah, he's abrasive, so I guess, one way to put it. Yeah. Yeah. What do you think? What do you think happens next for Progre? If you were, if you had to put some money on his next move, would you? And your options are,
I don't know. Taylor. I like your plan of him going to the ESPN. That makes sense to me. That seems like a good. But this is, he has to get out of this WBSS stuff.
What, how funny would it be if he got out of the WBSS and then just signed with Dazen? It's like, okay. Well, at least you're going to get paid more because the WBSS apparently sold for less. Like, Dazen acquired the rights to broadcast all those fights for less than what they're paying Golden Boy.
Well, that makes sense.
Significantly less.
Because there's no real...
Like 9 to 12 million, I believe.
Really? Because that seems like a wave. That's a ton of money because no one was offered. No U.S. broadcaster was going to offer them that.
If you add up all the purses for the WBSS for all those guys, it totals around 40 million.
Yeah, well, that's why they can't pay them on time.
Yeah, well, you know, 1 + 1 = 2. Anyway, we could move on to Billy Joe Saunders. Apparently, Matchroom is going to announce that they've signed him in a couple of days, although Mike Coppinger basically had that news several days ago. Do you think Matchroom is trying to sign all the drug cheats in boxing or just the British ones?
Just the British ones. They're trying to have an old juice league there in Matchroom.
Did they mess up in not signing Tyson Fury, or do you think they made up for it by signing Jarrell Miller?
Did they sign Jarrell Miller?
I don't know. He's like on a co-promotional deal or something.
Oh, yeah. No, he did that before. Yeah. 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 Well, the Tyson Fury, because Tyson's connected to Frank, so it's not like he was going to go to Matchroom. Yeah, it's at the time, you know, but yeah, the Tyson, come on, remember, he was like, he was in the darkness back then. Now he's a changed man.
Oh, really? Yeah. Tell me more ancient about the darkness. History.
It was ancient history 2 years ago. no, it's, yeah, this is not a good look for a promoter who just was involved with keeping a drug test quiet.
And who just completely obliterated Jarrell Miller for failing.
Yeah. Even though I do not agree Billy Joe Saunders' test should not have been a prohibition. He should not have been sanctioned because of that. Is that a competition? That was nonsense, you know.
You know, rules are rules.
You know, but only under VADA. Under WADA, it's not, you know.
Yeah, but VADA is the best drug testing body.
Oh, yeah, the guys with no history of funding anything except Don Caitlin, who's just on their board. You know, what has VADA ever done in the actual field of drug research?
They consult with Victor Conti, who has done a lot of drug research in his day.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did he research all the ways you could get away with cheating?
Yeah, you research all the ways to do acid and everything, too, when he's in the bands.
You know, he got really mad at me on Twitter one day.
I remember that, when he goofed on Snack.
Yeah. But it's like, dude, how is it that a guy who's got Snack all over his attire, who's listed on your website as being one of your athletes, he tests positive, and you want to go quiet?
Yeah, he went, yeah, William Monroe Jr., he didn't say a damn thing about drug testing then.
I know, you got all kinds of stuff to say all the like, every day, but your guy tests positive and you're just like, oh, let me just go ghost, we all wait till you guys all forget about it? That may work for Eddie Hearn and Dillian White, okay?
Well, it was funny that I also, on Twitter, I pointed out that he was still working with that the track coach that was also supposed to be accepting a lifetime ban from working with athletes. You know, a lot of people didn't know that, but like he kept working with Conte. So it's not just one dude who's involved with peddling steroids. It's two that's over at Snack.
Yeah, I know who you're now, talking about, but I can't remember his name.
Remy Turchemki.
How am I going to remember that?
Yeah, exactly. But a lot of people didn't even know he was still involved. But see, okay, so this is the thing. One, I think drug testing is very, very good. It's a lot better than people think because people talk about it like it is back in the 90s. And
like,
this is the problem.
Like they're doing a piss test and that's it.
Yeah, well, but that's pretty much all you need still. Urine test catches almost everything, you know. The thing with Victor Conte, when these writers like who's the last one, Coppinger used him for his source info. It's just Conte doesn't know anything. He's really good at just like the rest of us, you know, just being dudes who read a lot and he's very convincing, very swindling. When his history of presenting himself as a guy who beat the system is just complete bullshit. Because before the WADA code came around in 2003, the level to adjudicate like a positive drug test, you need to prove it was like a U.S. court rules. It had to be beyond a reasonable doubt.
Oh, boy.
You know, and until the WADA code came in, that's why there's such a lower level that if you fail a test, that's now you have to prove why you did not cheat. So they completely flipped it with the WADA code. So when these guys operated, LeConte and everything, like this, like he was getting involved with Medicare fraud lawsuits. You know, the IRS was up his ass for like all through the 90s. There was a case against Bill Romanowski where he was named as a steroid supplier, but that case fell apart just because of some procedural stuff. It's not like he was operating in the shadows and no one knew who he was. You know, they knew this guy was involved with steroids. You know, so when he still talks about how, you know, we beat the system, it's only because the system was so crazy and actual prosecuting, because they had the one cyclist, the one female cyclist who looked like a dude, and one of the testers caught her shaving her face one time because that's because she was so jacked up. Yeah, but no, but that was that was true. Like that's the guy testified in court over this, you know. That's they had her and she was still allowed to compete after failing a test because they were so limited in their ability to stop these people, even though they knew if they failed the test from getting into this before the WADA code, you know. So that's why guys like Memo Heredia pretty much was driven out because all his fighters did get tested, you know, like they did fail tests and they did get, you know, sanctioned. So everyone sort of dropped him there, and that's where he went back to school and blah, blah, blah. But, like, Victor Conte is not some super genius like he likes to pretend, you know. It was just through the way the drug testing system was, like, before the WADA code. And 2003, WADA code changes. Oh, suddenly Balco's out of business, you know.
Well, also, I don't think that Conte was, like, in his basement coming up with the chemicals. Like, he's not listed as one of the chemists.
It was Patrick Arnold.
He was a supplier. Yeah.
It was Patrick Arnold.
Yeah. He was just a dealer.
But see, Conte, the only thing he came up with was that Zima, which he still makes a lot of money off, which is just a garbage supplement. No, ZMA, not Zima, the clear.
No, I know what that is. I mean, actually, I don't know what that is, but I know I've seen it before.
ZMA is a big supplement that he was even peddling back then, because Snack existed back when it was like Snack had it was its own version. Like when Balco was still going, Snack was still alive, you know. Like he was running both companies, but Snack wasn't involved with the outright peddling of the steroids. But yeah, the ZMA is his supplement that he puts out. The people have tested and they say it doesn't do anything, but he makes a lot of money off, you know, peddling this around. So it's not, people got to stop using him as he has some kind of insight into the way USADA operates. Yeah.
Do you think it's suspect when athletes work with him?
It's not suspect. You know, I'm not saying it's not suspect, but it's another. It's just like sort of it's akin to our argument about Saudi Arabia. It's like you have better options.
Better guys, you know, that'll help you cheat.
No, that's it. I'm not saying that he's cheating. He's helping these guys cheat. I'm just saying that there are better options out there that make the optics are bad, I think, for these fighters to be working with a dude who just freely peddled steroids.
So you think it's bad that Devin Haney's with him?
Yeah, well, I'm not going to say it's bad. I'm just saying it's not a good look, you know. He's free to do whatever he wants. You know, just like the guys who work with Memo Heredia, they're probably doing legitimate strength training now. Because like I said, the drug testing has improved so much is that they're going to be on these guys. Like you can't just slip. Because people say, well, they have special secret steroids. Really? Well, then tell me what they are. Tell me how they're now changed the formulation of the, you know, synthetic steroids to get around the test. And I'm all ears. So, yeah, it's not bad because these guys, whatever, you know, and Remy Korchemky was a legitimate, you know, track coach. But to me, it just looks bad. You could find other strength and conditioning people, you know. But, of course, Snack is giving him money. So that's why they're with him. So,
well, I mean, it's kind of like, if you are going to have a strength and conditioning coach, you probably don't want the guy who's been guilty of cheating before. It just doesn't look good, right? Anyway, last night, Virgil Ortiz, he faced Antonio Orozco, and I don't know if you saw this, Chris Mannix believes that Virgil Ortiz is the best prospect in boxing.
Yeah, well, that's Chris Mannix.
Now, you I watched boxing. The fight. I've watched a lot of Virgil Ortiz in his career, and he's a good fighter, but best prospect in boxing, I don't know about that. I mean, what I see with him is an elite athlete. He is so fast. He throws with bad intentions, but like he landed pretty consistently for the first six rounds and could not stop Antonio Orozco. Orozco bullied him. He pushed him around the ring, had him fighting off the back foot. He won several rounds, I believe, or at least they were close. And Orozco's like a guy, people think like, oh, he's got like one or two losses. He's a pretty solid opponent. Actually, do your research. Orozco is like not a 147-pound fighter. He started out at 135. His first title campaign was at 135, got injured, had to move to 140, got beat up by Jose Ramirez, and then he moves up to 147 to fight Virgil Ortiz. Orozco is just a tough guy that's taking fights. So, like, this was a good fight, but, like, do not use this fight as a justification to say Virgil Ortiz needs to be challenged or moved up or whatever. Like, no way. Don't do that. Let Virgil Ortiz progress. Slow down on best prospect in boxing. Let Shakur Stevenson have that title because he's a lot closer to showing that. Ortiz, it could very likely look like Joey Spencer in his next fight, and everyone's going to kill him for it. Just relax. Let Ortiz develop. He's got like 14 fights now. There's no rush to get titles, especially with all the guaranteed money going around with all the networks. Nobody needs to rush to get any money just so fast. Because if you get a title, you're set up for some long-term success. I don't think you watched the fight. I talked to you yesterday, and you were saying that you didn't watch the fight.
No, I watched it today.
What'd you think?
I went back in time. I think it's a good fight for just building up Ortiz. You know, he got a little bit of trouble there by Orozco and everything. But like this is what you said when you talked earlier. These are the fights that people would never normally see. You know, these are the building block fights that would just, you know, be local fights and everything and never really get TV exposure. So, yeah, you can't rush a fighter like this. You can't say, oh, man, he's going to be the greatest thing ever off this fight. No, it's just he's had some trouble with the guy who maybe shouldn't have trouble with at all. But then he stopped him. So that's what it is. I think it's just a good fight, you know, in terms of building him up. But it's not a good fight saying he's a world beater. And just like I said with Teofimo Lopez, and we saw what happened to him, it's like you can't start rushing these guys. You know, these are their building block fights. You can't start pushing them to world championship titles off of these kind of fights. You know, they're not there yet.
This is not the UFC. Like, you don't have to have a guy in a world title fight when they're 5-0.
Yeah, yeah.
In boxing, and it just takes a long time.
Yeah.
Even the best fighters that you can think of, Andre Ward, had 20 fights, I believe, or 19 when he went into the Super Six.
Yeah.
No, I think.
And he'd been dropped by like some journeyman too, you know. So that's it. That's Andre. Yeah, and that's Andre Ward, you know, one of the best boxers ever.
So yeah. Also last night, Robesi Ramirez, Cuban double Olympic gold medalist, made his big debut and he got dropped in the first round and lost the fight.
It's not the amateurs.
It is not the amateurs, and he really fought like that. But like, isn't it amazing that Robesi Ramirez lost in his first fight? Lomachenko lost in his second pro fight. Zhu Ximing went 13-0.
I don't know, who was he fighting? How, like, did you know the guy he was fighting?
Ramirez?
Adon Gonzalez?
Adon Gonzalez. No, I didn't know him. And I also didn't know, like, Eliezer Alvarez, who Zhu Ximing fought in his first fight, but what does that matter? Oh, wow, I remember that, like, right on the money. He fought Eliezer Alvarez, or Valenzuela, it was Valenzuela. And then Jesus Ortega, Juan Toscano, who, never mind, just not going to go there. Yeah, he went 6-0 before losing. So, not bad. Not bad.
I didn't really know much about this dude. So, like, did Top Rank just screw up, or what happened?
Well, no. I don't think so. I think Top Rank did what they needed to do on paper. They signed a fight for, they gave Ramirez this platform. It's like, hey, look, Ramirez is a guy who was a top amateur, beat Shakur Stevenson, 2 medals. You know how much Top Rank is hard for those medals. So we see a clear path to building this guy up, get him some fights, and then we do the rematch with Shakur Stevenson. It's a built-in narrative. And they tried to do the same thing with Michael Conlan by signing Vladimir Nitikin.
Oh, this is the guy that fought Steve. Okay, now I remember this whole thing. Well, just looking at it, I think they did fuck up because that Gonzalez had a record of 4-2-2.
Yeah, but so, I mean, the dude fought in the Glitter Dome.
Yeah, I know, but he's known. If you're starting a dude out his very first fight, that's where you look for the 0-1 dudes, you know.
I agree with that, but I also think that he's got 2 medals. He should be confident.
Who gives a shit about medals? It's amateur fucking boxing. It's
Top
not professional
Rank is
fucking
all about
boxing.
That. I think they messed up here.
This whole thing, and this is something fucking horrible that Max Kellerman's really responsible too for pushing this idea that amateur pedigree is like going to carry over professional. It fucking doesn't. It means you're well traveled and usually seen a lot of styles, but you've got to be babied. You know, so many amateurs fucking flame out. It's like 2 gold medals. Who gives a fuck?
Well, when he got dropped, that was footwork. He was way out of position when he got dropped.
Yeah, so it's like
Ramirez is a guy who it looks like he's been fighting a ton of guys who just aren't that skilled. He looks like a guy who he was so fast, and that's why he was able to connect a lot frequently, why he was able to be successful as an amateur. But in this fight, like, Gonzalez just stood his ground, and Ramirez was, and he stood his ground and just fought at a high pace. Ramirez thought he could pot shot and be slick in the fight and score points, and it did not work out. I mean, Ramirez is very fast. You saw some signs that he is a talented fighter, but the reality, he just looked like he got beat by a fighter who knew what they were doing.
Yeah, that's it. You know, the Top Rank should be smarter than that, you know.
Well, I think they've kind of maybe bought into their own hype in terms of how good they are at bringing these Olympic guys along. Because on paper, this looked like a good enough fight for Ramirez.
I guess because Shakur Stevenson, he's came in against guys who had like 7 or 8 fights too, you know, and with winning records. So maybe they did get suckered by their own medicine that they had a better eye than what maybe they're, you know.
Well, Shakur Stevenson, really actually, his first opponent was 3-2-1.
Yeah, but that's a lot of fights for a guy making his professional debut.
He had lost 2 straight fights, by the way. And they were like, you know what? This is our guy.
Yeah, yeah. Like, it doesn't sound like a lot of fights because they're not fighting top opponents. But when you take an amateur into pro ranks, you really got to find out if he can fight in a professional ranks. You know, and we've seen this with the Cubans as well. Most of the Cubans never even came across because their style does not translate. They know how to win amateur bouts.
And you look at the guys who have translated, and it's like, okay, you figured it out and you've got power. Arizandy Lara, that dude's got power.
Yeah, yeah, you know.
Guillermo Rigondeaux, power. Yuricus Gamboa, just tremendous power. Although that dude was also seeing what do they call those?
Anti-aging specialists.
An anti-aging specialist, yeah.
Yeah. Which being Cuban is kind of probably appropriate.
Luis Ortiz, big puncher. Dude nearly killed Latif Coyote.
Yeah.
Shout out to you if you remember that fight. It's one of the ones, I believe, that Luis Ortiz tested positive after.
Yes, one of them. He did. Yeah, he tested positive.
But hey, when you're his age, you do need to go to anti-aging clinics.
Yeah, he does. And he needs to go to aging reversing clinics there.
Let me just make sure.
He's looking for the Benjamin Button.
Yep, I was right. It was overturned because Luis Ortiz failed the drug test. Anyway, coming up this week, we have Emmanuel Navarrete facing Francisco de Vaca at the Bank of California Stadium in LA. Like, this is crazy. This is a big soccer stadium that they've just built. Probably seats 14 to 16,000 people. And this is your main event. Emmanuel Navarrete versus Francisco de Vaca. Now, granted, on paper, it looks pretty solid. Both guys are Navarrete, 27-1, 23 knockouts. We know him. We saw him face Isaac Dogbe and just beat the hell out of him twice. Francisco de Vaca, 20-0. Not bad, right? Oh, only 6 knockouts. Little troubling. Jesse Magdaleno on the undercard against Rafael Rivera, who, if you remember, gave Leo Santa Cruz an entertaining but short, came up short in that fight with Santa Cruz. Is Top Rank nuts? This, remember, this was supposed to be the card that was headlined by Luis Collazo and our friend Jose Benavidez. But Benavidez got injured.
Who the fuck knows what Top Rank's up to? Like I said, you know, this has been a pretty shaky year for them, you know.
I didn't remember. I just looked it up, but now it's all coming back to me. Jose Benavidez is not fighting because our man got arrested for street racing.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to remember. Because I remember they said he got injured, but then he got arrested for street racing.
Yeah. So our boy Benavidez not going to fight. Top Rank has just had an interesting year. And I can't put my finger on, like, what is the cause? Because it's like, okay, ESPN is in charge here, okay? And you're not going to tell ESPN and Disney in general how to run your business, because as much as
Top Rank thinks they are, though.
In terms of which fights are on ESPN versus ESPN Plus.
No, I think Top Rank, well, okay, maybe that, but Top Rank controls a lot of the choices in this deal.
Oh, for sure. You know? They're completely in charge of the matchmaking and all that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess between ESPN and ESPN Plus, that'd probably be ESPN's deal. But yeah, they've ceded a lot of control to Top Rank in this deal, which some people have commented about. But yeah, okay, go ahead. Sorry, cut you off.
Oh, it's okay. So, and this is the fight that is going to actually be on ESPN. I mean, I guess it was good that Jason Sosa versus Lydell Rhodes fight was on ESPN Plus, because, like, I mean, when you're trying to put your best foot forward on ESPN and say, hey, we have great boxing, championship-level boxing, I think the last thing you want is a fight like Jason Sosa, who, I'm telling you right now, they're doing a rehab job on Jason Sosa to make everyone forget that he got beat by Lomachenko, so that he can be fed to someone else, probably Burchelt, probably Oscar Valdez.
Well, that's the game, eh? You know, I'm sure the ESPN announcers will be working overtime.
Dude, Joe Tessitore for the first time last night was just stunned when Ramirez got put down. Like, Tessitore short-circuited.
Yeah, TSN didn't cover that card.
I wonder why. They were like, oh, you want us to cover this ESPN Plus card? Nah, we'll show the Little League World Series.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I think they're just maybe a little bit snake bit. You know, it happens.
No, but what I was going to say is, like, in terms of, like, being on what's on ESPN Plus versus, oh, we got a tweet from Mike Coppinger, who's trying to break some news right now. He says a deal is imminent to match Gennady Golovkin and Sergey Derevianchenko in a middleweight title bout on DAZN. And contracts are being drafted in order to maintain October 5 date at MSG. Deal needs to be closed in coming days. Your thoughts live.
Oh, well, you know, I'm glad they could get this done and pay $20 million plus to see Golovkin fight Derevianchenko. The fight people have been wanting for decades.
You think that they'll do? They'll be able to sell out Madison Square Garden?
Probably not.
Do you think that they even open up the upper bowl?
No, yeah, they will. I think they can do probably 12, 13, maybe.
That's depending on how they push it. That means it's only lower bowl. lower bowl is usually 14,000.
But I'm saying if they open up the upper bowl, get those cheap tickets running.
I wonder what else is happening in New York around that time, because PBC has not announced, and we understand that this is always what they do. They tend to not show a lot of fights in the fall, you know, because they're not trying to compete with the NFL, which, or college football.
Yeah, but that's a bit different now, because now Fox sort of wants to tie in the boxing with the football.
Well, I think the dates are already set, and I imagine that next year is going to be different, because they're seeing the success that the PBC cards are having, and in conjunction with that and the success that they will do. So, you know, we have two fights that will happen during the NFL season so far that we know of, and that's Spence and Porter, which is a pay-per-view, which, not apples to apples, but I'm sure they'll take some, they'll do some numbers on it that they'll use to justify. But the other one will be the Julian Williams and Jared Hurd rematch, which will be in December. I think they're going to look at that and say, oh, the NFL actually helps us out a lot. We should plan to do more cards during the NFL season. And Fox has moved their, I don't know what you call it, game of the week. They've moved the start times of the game of the week that they're going to be doing for college football, because what they used to do is they would have a primetime game for their quote-unquote game of the week.
Yeah, like I was about to say,
to a noon kickoff time, which opens up the evening.
Okay, if they're doing that, then that definitely, to me, says that they're liking what they're getting from boxing, because the cost is so much lower than the UFC, you know, and they got more upside. So yeah, that's a big thing, because their college football was the prime time. So if they're going to start moving their college football down and sort of like use it as a lead in, then yeah, because this is what they want. They get a whole package. You get college, you get boxing, and you can push all the sports you're working there. You know.
And the numbers are pretty strong. We didn't talk about the Konatsky numbers, but those were pretty strong for, I mean,
a dude no one really knows.
A dude no one really knows fighting Chris Areola.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
Who fell off the scene, like, you know.
Although, yeah, that fight was just insanity. I watched that fight. I'm like, what are these guys doing? Yeah.
Those dudes unloaded. It was good to see.
Like, Jesus.
Especially if Areola's going out, which he probably is. I think I think he's going to retire, because I think he does. I don't think he wants. It's smart.
Because his brains got bashed around?
Yeah, but that's a good fight to go out on, you know? He did have a successful second half, you know? Not a championship second half or anything, but he did come back, you know? Because, like, even he said, I think he did an AMA on Reddit years ago, where he said, yeah, he started drinking too much, you know, and everything. He wasn't taking the sport seriously. And so he came back, you know, he can go out with a bunch of money, and, you know, he had a good showing. You know, people know him as a solid fighter.
Well, he also said on the AMA that he had actually never met Al Haymon, which I thought was hilarious.
Yeah, you know, a lot of guys don't. Look at the crazy transfer dude they've usually never met, you know. He just gets shit done.
You know who also, like, I feel like at this point, if you meet Al Haymon, you're doing something wrong or really, really right. Because Gervonta was like, yeah, I had to have a meeting with Al Haymon, and he told me that, and basically what's appeared to be Al Haymon just ripped into him.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway, I just, Coppinger also tweeted out something about Billy Joe Saunders, which is actually interesting, because signing Billy Joe Saunders makes sense for Matchroom, especially if they're, you know, it's possible that Eddie's signing Billy Joe Saunders is like, we need to reestablish the UK.
Well, definitely. So this is it. It's like, okay, what's going on with him in the zone? You know, if you tie into what he's doing locally, he picked up Peter Fury, you know, now he's got Billy Joe Saunders. And as even the UK fans had to admit, ever since this DAZN in the U.S., his Matchroom stuff has really fell off, like a lot of the fights, you know. And then if you're losing Dillian White, you know, you're going to need something. So maybe, yeah, maybe things are frosty between him and the home office there.
Well, also because, like, if you look at what DAZN has to offer at 168, it's like Callum Smith and that's it.
Yeah, and who's Callum Smith with?
Yeah. Eddie.
Yeah, so.
But that's one fight.
Yeah, well, yeah, but you can also pump that up with a bunch of jabroni fights before you match them down, you know?
Saunders can't make 160 without cheating.
Yeah. Well, he
I'm telling you right now, he can't make 160 without cheating.
Oh, he's just not disciplined. So yeah, he's going to 168. Yeah. So yeah, so this has a taste of a home fight domestic pay per views in the UK there.
Do you think that? So we're basically at the 1 year mark for Dazen and their deal with Eddie Hearn, that $1 billion deal over 8 years, which has opt outs at year 2 and 4.
Yeah.
What do you think the odds are that they pick up the option and say, "All right, give us more"?
Without AJ, no. I think they'll just be saying, "We'll think about carrying your fights," but I don't know. I think that Matchroom USA partnership might be dying there in year two.
I think so too, and it's really like a shame because, look, we like to mess with them a lot, but like it had potential. Like the deal looked like it could have been something.
Yeah, well, like I said, that's why I almost feel bad making fun of him now, because everything I said about before sort of come to pass. You know, it fell apart. You just can't walk into, like, Eddie Hearn had this attitude backed by all these U.S. writers that were so in love with his U.K. product, you know. They thought this was the greatest thing ever, and it's like, because they just shit on the U.S. product when these fighters in the U.S. are bringing in a lot of fans. You know, you're just not Wembley-level fans, but that's like a one-off with AJ, you know. And, well, the Frosch fight, but so Eddie decided he could walk right into the U.S. and just take everything over. Well, these guys don't know how things are done, and then he hit a fucking wall because he's like, this is big boy territory.
Well, also, you know? It's like, oh, you know, we have laws that prevent you from doing the sort of exploitative things you do in the U.K.?
Yeah, yeah, you just can't. Yeah, fighters got options, you know, fighters got recourse to the law, you know, a lot more than even they know. So it's maybe Eddie's just trying to, maybe this whole AJ Saudi Arabia thing is just about him realizing, I better start reestablishing my UK base just in case shit goes wrong.
No, but this is something that I don't think anybody's really talking about, which is like, we may just be seeing like the basically the rebuilding of like basically an exit plan in case that deal doesn't get picked up. And I don't think that means that Matchroom USA doesn't exist anymore. I don't think anything like that. But I think Eddie now turns his attention back to the UK, where the bread has been buttered so well in the past. And look, if Joshua loses against Ruiz, I said earlier that I don't see him ever winning against a top guy. But I damn well guarantee that he will have 4 or 5 fights against lower level heavyweights, which will do solid numbers in the UK, which will help to bolster the UK.
Yeah, like,
or the UK standing.
They'll have him fight David Price, and they say he's back.
Ooh, no! Realistically, like that would be a big move for and a big deal in the UK.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's what they'll do. You know, so definitely, if they continue in the US, I'm pretty sure they're going to renegotiate a lot of terms about cuts that they're giving Eddie. Yeah, you know, if they keep him on, but otherwise, yeah, okay. Like you throw Saudi Arabia on top of all this. Yeah, it looks like maybe Eddie's he could see the writing on the wall, you know, of what this U.S. hold the zone partnership is.
Now, should that happen, and they, you know, I still give them credit. Like, they all got paid a lot of money.
Yeah.
So, fair enough to them. But anyway, we'll wrap it up here. I'll play you out with some sound from some more Saudi Arabia sound. Fred, thanks for coming on. If you like the podcast, rate, review, give us a good rating. If you want more content, there's certainly no shortage of content over on patreon.com/SundayPuncher. We also have like a free newsletter you can get there, which is like actually physical. Like you'll get something in the mail. In addition to additional podcast content and all that stuff. Plus a cool chat room where you can actually talk with people who... most of them know what they're talking about, but some don't. But Fred and I are there all the time. Tom's there. All the guys in the podcast that you may want to talk with, we're over there in that chat room. And you can just message us privately and just tell us how much you hate some of the other ones. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm one of the people that doesn't know what they're talking about in that chat room. So, but it's a lot of fun.
It's okay. As long as you give us a rundown of the Saudi Arabia human rights track record, we're fine with that.
Knew it all along. Everyone in the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia knew it all along. The monster among men is the greatest Royal Rumble champion.
It is a celebration of an absolutely historic night here in Jeddah.
the greatest Royal Rumble in history. Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman is Saudi Vision 2030 to bring entertainment like this to this country. And it was very successful tonight.
Those aren't missiles, it's fireworks.
49 other men in the largest Royal Rumble in history. What a moment.
What a night.
Thanks for joining us, everybody, on this WWE Network special. Good night from Jeddah in the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia.